and mouthed. The MPs started forward, but Fitzy began to rise to his hands and knees. He waved a hand at them, and they stopped, looking askance.
If that's what you want, who am I to deny you?
He spread his hands, and Britton felt the suppression take hold as Fitzy started forward.
You're fucking dead, you sack of shit! I tried, I really did, but some people absolutely cannot be taught!
Britton kicked out blindly and caught Fitzy's ankle. Fitzy hit him with a sharp elbow to the sternum. Fitzy's hands, raw and mud-crusted, found Britton's throat and began to squeeze.
He's really gonna kill me. He's really that crazy. This is how I die.
And then, suddenly, the pressure was gone.
Do you have any idea what you're doing?
I can't let you do this, sir.
Britton stood, his vision slowly coming clear. Fitzy had backed up to the corner of the chow hall tent. Before him, bright tusks glittering, lurched the embalmed corpse of the silver boar from the OC.
You're an idiot, Rictus. I can switch that magic off.
But then you'd switch mine on, and I will cut off your fucking head just as soon as I can open the gate, sir.
The boar lurched forward another step, shambling on sharp metallic hooves. Fitzy jerked his head from the boar to Britton, then up to Truelove, and back again. His eyes widened and his jaw trembled.
Fear? Holy crap! This is Fitzy afraid!
Fitzy's gaze sawed left and right. Britton followed his eyes. The MPs were gone. Fitzy turned to Downer and Richards, standing wide-eyed outside the OC's entrance.
You two! Give me a goddamn hand here!
Neither of them moved.
I swear to God, you will fucking pay for this. You all will. This is gross insubordination. This is fucking mutiny. You are all going to die.
That'd be fine, sir. Now you run along and have a great day.
Britton motioned to Truelove, who backed the boar off a couple of steps. Fitzy took a hesitant step away, skirting the boar. He looked back at them, meeting each of their eyes in turn.
I don't know what the hell you all think you've accomplished, but I assure you, you've just earned yourself a world of hurt.
Oh shit. We're so fucking dead. I can't believe I just did that.
I've got to get the hell out of here.
You saved my life. Thank you.
You can thank me, Graveside. Do you honestly think Command is going to tolerate mutinous probe contractors? Oh my god, we are so fucking dead.
He was going to kill Marty.
Marty's a fucking goblin! Do you really think anyone cares other than us?
Wait, where is Marty?
The MPs took him.
Took him where?
Where the hell do you think? They're gonna fire him. He's as good as dead. We didn't accomplish a goddamn thing.
What is magic, really? It is the monkey wrench in the works. It is the great leveler. Suddenly, without warning, the kid who bags your groceries is stronger than an infantry division. The homeless guy you ignored for years has the power to cure your scoliosis. The criminal on death row can now stop a forest fire or save a cruise ship trapped in a storm. Magic is the death of social structure. It has taken the completed puzzle, broken the pieces apart, and tossed them in the air. It's up to us to put them back together again. The new picture they form will be very different from the old one. Jonathan Tillich, Magic and Society, Part 6, Public Radio Network.
Britton took off running, not looking back.
Where the hell are you going?
To save Marty. To finish this.
What did he think he was going to do? Charge into the cache and carry Marty away? They'd shoot him dead.
No. My magic will stop them. And I can drop dead in the mud, clutching a chest that slowly hemorrhages purple. The ATTD has got to come out.
There was no time. If he was going to save Marty, he had to do this now. Britton made for the sass. Britton forced himself to measure his stride, to walk casually toward the gate, hands in his pockets. It felt like it took an eternity to walk all the way to the gate at that maddeningly casual pace. One of the gate guards, squinted in the darkness, began to salute, then dropped his arm when he realized that Britton was a contractor.
Good evening, sir.
Evening. What's going on?
Another day, another dollar. What can I do for you?
I'm Keystone, Umbra Coven. I used to be an enrollee here.
I recognize you, sir. What's going on?
Chief Warrant Officer Fitzsimmons wanted me to drop something off with Major Salamander. Just take a second.
Sure thing.
Britton moved through the gate, trying to look unhurried as he made his way toward the Quonset huts. The pillbox hung in his peripheral vision, two suppressors on duty, one seated on a camp chair just outside the door. Britton risked a look over his shoulder. The gate guards were already out of view. The guards in the towers barely spared him a glance, their bored eyes cast outward. Britton broke off and veered to his right, moving toward the pillbox. One suppressor stood in the darkness, his face illuminated by the tip of his cigarette. The other leaned against the wall, camp chair tilted back. He rocked it forward so it stood straight and waved distractedly.
Hey.
Hey, guy. Life in the fast lane, eh?
No doubt. What's going...
The other suppressor had only begun to turn toward him as Britton pivoted on his leg, rocketing his foot up and over.
Oh, sir!
Sir? Hello? Oh, Christ!
A searchlight lit, the beam dancing crazily across the ground before him.
Damn it, Scylla! Wake the hell up!
I'm awake, Oscar. Thanks for coming.
Britton threw open a gate and crouched behind. Britton could see the doors to the Quonset huts off to his left slamming open. Swift stood there, Peapod, Tsunami, and some of the other enrollees behind him, gaping. Major Salamander emerged from another door, his body already wreathed in bright orange flame. Britton felt a current reach out, snaking into his own, rolling it back, snapping the gate shut. And then the pillbox disintegrated. Scylla stood in the midst of the ruin, her pale mouth stretched in a vulpine smile. Her current was wild, intense. The magic flooded back into him as the suppression dropped. He stood and looked around. The first thing he saw was Salamander, sprawling in the mud, clutching at his stomach, his flame out. A company of guards writhed in the dirt before him, also grasping their abdomens.
My, oh my. I've been waiting for this for a very, very long time.
Swift turned, pushed back against his fellow inmates, and retreated inside the hut, slamming the door behind him.
Scylla, please! I kept my part of the bargain. Take this thing out of my chest!
She looked at him, her eyes distant, distracted, as if noticing him for the first time.
Indubitably. But first, let a girl stretch her legs.
The sass collapsed. The chain-link fencing shuddered, the polyurethane coating bubbling and cracking off, the metal first rusting, then melting, then blowing apart. The wooden towers sagged, wet-looking, and finally collapsed into black sludge that pooled in stinking bogs. The schoolhouse collapsed. The guards writhed, their flesh turning transparent, then black, then fluid, seeping into the ground to leave purple skeletons, which soon followed suit, dissipating into a runny yellowish slime the color of turned egg yolks. Britton tried to count the dead. Had they said she'd killed 20? There must have been 50 gone at a stroke. The suppressor he'd kicked into unconsciousness was reduced to a puddle of human sludge. Not a guard was alive as far as he could see. Britton's stomach spasmed in horror.
You did this. You let her go.
The Quonset huts, with the enrollees inside, so far as Britton could tell, were untouched. Scylla strode toward Salamander.
I told you, didn't I? I told you that this was coming.
Oh, God! Scylla, stop it! Jesus, this wasn't the deal! You were supposed to take the bomb out!
And I will, just as soon as I'm finished here. I'm going to leave you alive. Do you know that? First, I'm going to mix up your guts so that no healer can ever fix them quite right. Then I'm going to waltz out of here right in front of your face so you can see what comes of trying to hold your betters.
Fuck.
Would they set off the ATTD? At this point, would it be more than he deserved? How many dead because of him? Britton couldn't permit himself to think about it. He gathered his magic and threw it out toward her, suppressing the flow that flooded into the Major. For a brief moment, he felt Scylla's magic roll back. Then her tide surged through his, gripping the Major ever more tightly.
I told you to wait until I was finished.
No way. I can't let you kill him.
You can't stop me either, you idiot. You don't fucking get it, do you? I am not in the habit of sparing cockroaches, Oscar, nor do I take kindly to those who interfere with my efforts at extermination.
If you kill him, I'll never get you out of here.
I don't need you to gate me out of here, Oscar. I never did. All I needed was for you to get me free of the suppression. And in that capacity, you've performed admirably.
Britton's own gut clenched. He was overcome with nausea so intense that he felt his stomach was lurching inside him, kicking, expanding, struggling to escape.
I understand. It's Stockholm Syndrome or something similar. You're identifying with your captors, sympathizing with them. You just need a moment to see reason. You just need a reminder of what you are. Feel that? That's your reminder. That's what you are, what I am. It's what's in us both. Can you feel that? That's power, Oscar. That's your birthright. Now you understand what it is. You think the sock has taught you anything? That dampener has castrated you, Oscar. You have no idea what you're truly capable of. And now that you have a sample of it, can we kindly dispense with the moralizing and get the hell out of here?
Just as quickly as her magic had gripped him, it was gone. Major Salamander lay opposite him, perfectly still.
We're wasting time, Oscar. Let's go. I can still take the ATTD out once we're quit of this place. Show me that you've broken through their efforts to brainwash you. All you have to do is move us.
Britton reached out a trembling hand toward Salamander, brushed his nose with his fingertips. No reaction. The Major was dead.
Come, Oscar, let me help you up.
Fuck off. Kill me if you want to. I'm not opening shit.
Don't be silly, Oscar. Even now they're coming. What do you think they'll do if they find you here?
Fucking kill me, I hope. I'm the idiot who freed you, who let you do this. Here's hoping they kill you too.
Pretty, but not too smart. They're not going to kill me, Oscar. If they were going to kill me, don't you think they would have done it already? They put a bit of explosive in your chest, and you quail and beg and do whatever they tell you. You never got it, did you, Oscar? I explained it, plain and simple. They're not going to kill you unless they absolutely have to, unless you give them no choice at all. Only the tiniest fraction of the human population comes up latent. We're too precious to kill. The corpses I left behind are all lost in the cost-benefit analysis.
They were going to carve up your brain. They figured they weren't getting enough for the cost of keeping you. They were going to make you like Billy. If I just waited a little while longer, they would have done it.
Well, I suppose I should thank you then, shouldn't I? Because their return on investment is about to go way into the red. One more chance, Oscar. Are you helping me? Or am I not going to get killed by the sock on my own?
Fuck you!
A pity. Well, I'm not going to kill you, Oscar Britton. Instead, I'm going to leave you to reap the rewards of your position. You're of no use to me if you're not going to open a gate, so you can keep that bomb in your chest. You clearly prefer it to freedom. I don't have the time to give you the education you so clearly need. I'm done mothering you, Oscar. If you live, if any of you lives, perhaps you'll come to learn in time. When you do, I'd be much obliged of your company. Bye now.
She turned back to the fence line and spread her arms. The fence collapsed, rotting back to the mud like everything else inside the sass. Scylla began to walk forward, her shoulders lightly dusted by swirling motes of rusted metal, disintegrating in the gentle breeze. Britton craned his head to one side, and his eyes widened. All along the FOB's perimeter, outside the SAS's boundaries, the concrete barricade walls were crumbling, the skeletal stubs of their rebar supports stuck out into the sky, briefly silhouetted against the moon before they too flashed into flaking rust and blew away in the wind. It went on as far as Britton could see in both directions. An Apache, circling on patrol, highlighted Scylla within a bright halo of its searchlight before suddenly breaking apart. Scylla turned to Britton, winked, and waved, then turned on her heel and strode out of the fob, disappearing in the blackness beyond. A As far as Britton could see in either direction, the fob's perimeter had completely vanished. The base was entirely open, near as he could tell, to the countryside. Britton knelt, paralyzed with horror. So many dead, so much destruction. All because of him, because he had let her go. And the ATTD still nestled in his heart, mocking him, reminding him that this swath of ruin had all been for nothing. There were movements in the grass beyond, small, hunched creatures rising out of the long grasses, goblin spotters from the hostile defender tribes. They stood in the sawtoothed, swaying grasses, their silhouettes betraying utter shock. Britton knew what that horn blast meant.
The defenses are down.
The way is open. Come now, we may never have this chance again.
Panic-fueled adrenaline fired in Britton's heart and stomach, strength flowing back into him. He lurched to his feet, turning to the wasteland that had once been the Sass's gate, and ran with all he had.
You can call it blasphemy all you want, but the timing is perfect. Jesus Christ was an unusually powerful physiomancer during the last reawakening cycle. Your whole system of belief is based on a fluke of history. What you do with that realization is your problem, but it sure as hell should deflate your basis for oppressing homosexuals, outlawing abortion, and prohibiting magical schools. Mary Copburn, Council for Ethical Atheism.
With every step, Britton's mind returned to his heart. He imagined that he could feel the ATTD bouncing, dancing in his ventricle, waiting for the signal that would tell it to end him. His feet pounded with the rhythm of his heartbeat. Boom. When would the boom come? Britton burst through the cache flaps, charging into the trauma unit. Several orderlies stared at him, but all the MPs were gone. Perez stood in the trauma unit, chatting sympathetically with a young Marine who was gingerly testing his shoulder.
I need to speak to you.
Her eyes lighted on his bruised neck, his skinned hands and arms. Her nose wrinkled at the rotten stink on his clothes. She held his gaze for a moment before nodding.
Follow me.
She led him to the row of individual examination rooms, each kitted out with a long hospital gurney, complete with foam mattress, curtained off from the bustle of the main cache. As soon as she'd closed the curtain, he seized her elbows and drew her close.
You gotta get this thing out of my chest right now.
Are you crazy? I don't know if I can even do it, and I haven't had a chance to get the meds I need yet. The pain could kill you.
I'm dead anyway, and so is Marty if you can't get me free of this thing in the next few minutes.
Oh, God, Oscar, what happened?
It'll take too long to explain. Suffice to say that I fucked up big time. This whole fob is about to come down around our ears. They've got Marty, and they're probably gonna kill him as soon as they realize what the hell is going on. While I'm at it, I need to get us all out of here. I can't do that if the sock can track me. Therese, we don't have any time. You have to try. Please, Therese, I need you to do this.
Get on the cot. Hurry.
She picked up a syringe.
All I can get are some benzodiazepines. It'll calm you down more than the dampener, but it's not gonna do anything for the pain.
Let's get it over with.
She looked at him, one hand on his forehead. He held her eyes as he felt the syringe pierce his shoulder and the chemical wash into his bloodstream. It was followed by peace, a dizzy and relaxed euphoria. His heart slowed. The harsh sodium lights took on a halo of rainbows. Therese waxed more beautiful than ever.
I love you.
Therese smiled and leaned down, her lips brushing his forehead. He kept his eyes closed as she pulled away. The doped fog washed over him. Britton's mind cartwheeled, forming escape plans. Once the ATTD was out and he could gate away, then what? Rescue Marty? Bring Therese? Somehow convince Umbra Coven to come with him? Take them all somewhere the Sock could never follow? But the Sock could always follow, couldn't they? Britton wasn't their only portamancer. Billy's drooling face swam into his drug-addled vision. Anywhere Britton could go, the Sock could follow.
Hang on, Oscar. I'll do this as fast as I can.
He felt something pressed against his mouth and opened to accept it. A small rubber ball. He bit down on it instinctively. The warm ripples of her current intensified, dropping down into his chest, slipping behind his ribs, and cradling his heart. They curled there, gripping the muscle. Britton could feel the tendrils moving through the valves and chambers. It tingled, but didn't hurt. They probed. Britton could feel the magic gather. Pause.
Oh, there it is. Here we go.
Scylla's assault on him had been nothing compared to this. His breath vanished, his vision gone white for the second time in less than an hour. A vice gripped his heart. He could feel the ATTD migrating, the flesh spasming to push it upward. The muscle shuddered, threatened to stop, but the tendrils of magic kept it beating steadily. But Therese couldn't keep the body's natural rhythm. Waves of agony sounded across his body as every cell cried out in rage at the flow of oxygen suddenly interrupted. Pain became the whole of his universe, eternal, all-encompassing. Oscar Britton lay in it and prayed to die. And then, mercifully, he did. Stanley Britton stood naked, his wiry body strong as ironwood, the muscles mapping a rolling landscape beneath the skin. Only his face and silver-threaded hair betrayed his age. He hovered above the saw-edged grass, weird stars drifting overhead. Demon horses cavorted around him. His fingertips touched lightly over their shaggy backs. A huge stone resting on his chest, Oscar lay on his back and looked at his father. The weight crushed him. Blood lapped the edges.
Dad, get it off! It hurts!
Sir! Show some goddamn respect.
It's killing me.
Funny how that works. Just desserts, I'd say.
I'm sorry. I didn't want to...
The stone dug deeper. He felt his ribs give way beneath the weight, his lungs compressing.
You always were a little slow on the uptake. Do I look hurt to you? If I were any better, I'd need rubber pants. No, I'm just fine. You're the one who's dead.
Snow swept around him, the air suddenly chill. The fat flakes rained down around the stone, soaking the blood, burying him. The cold swept into his veins, freezing him, making him leaden. A black shape blossomed behind Stanley's head, extending long, slender limbs over his shoulders. Oscar strained to make it out, but the blizzard picked up, obscuring his vision. Stanley vanished in the deluge until all Oscar could see was his head, leaning back into the crook of another's neck. The shadow behind him nuzzled him affectionately, like a lover.
I'll see you soon, son.
Oscar!
The snow began to clear. The cold and agony remained.